Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed in the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Michael B.
Yay, Michael!
Okay, everybody. My name is Michael, and I'm a compulsive overeater. And I feel a little nervous. Peter, nervous? But kind of comfortable because I know a lot of people in the room. And it's a very gentle program. I have a sponsee. I'm secretary of the kitchen sink meeting. And that meets on Saturdays at 9 o'clock. And I have a sponsee who is notorious for being late. And he came late to the meeting. And so I picked somebody to start the meeting, and the person said, well, should I stop when the speaker comes? I go, by all means, no. I'm not going to enable this person. I'm going to be a good sponsor. And they read, and he showed up, sure enough, 5 minutes late. And then everybody said, let him speak. And I said, but you want me to enable him? And they said, yes. And so he came up, and he spoke. So I don't know. I just can't figure this thing out. But there's always been a loving higher power that's been available to me in these rooms. And most of the time I feel it, and sometimes I don't. And that's why I come here, to feel it again, to get contact with a power that can do for me what I can't do for myself. Not only with my compulsive overeating, but in my life, living life on life's terms. I've been doing this for a while. And in retrospect, you know, when you look back at your life, HP is there during the whole time. But when you're going through it, when I'm going through the next indicated fear, it all feels like Pollyanna bullshit. I told my sponsor, this is Pollyanna bullshit, Terrell. What are you talking about? We're reading all this stuff. And he says, Michael, your mantra for today is act on the Pollyanna bullshit. That's what you do. Sorry for cursing, but... I'll try not to do it anymore. So anyway, let me tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. Seppi, thank you for having me. Seppi is like my sponsor's best friend. Sometimes I get a little jealous, but my sponsor's not supposed to be my friend, Seppi. You know that. And so I came in the early 80s. I got sober. I got clean and sober, 1982 originally. And I had a three-pack-a-day cigarette habit. After my year's sobriety, I was smoking like a fiend. And I would bitch and complain about it in AA meetings. And the old-timers told me to shut up. And I thought I was offended. I thought I could say anything. This is a 12-step program. And they go, no, you don't understand the traditions. You know, we talk about drinking. We care about your drinking. Take that outside somewhere else. And I thought, that's mean. That's rude. And I didn't know what to do. I was desperate. And some guy put his arm around me and said, Michael, do you know there's Smokers Anonymous? I think it's Nicotine Anonymous now. It's still in existence. And he says, why don't you go there and bitch and complain about your smoking habit? And I did. It's a Yucca. I think there's still a church on Yucca in Hollywood. And there was one guy with a big book. And he spent the hour talking about what he was like, what happened, and how the cigarette obsession was removed. And I came back, and it took me, I guess in retrospect, about 6 weeks, and the three-pack-a-day habit was removed. And he said, Michael, I'm so happy. You're now the secretary of this meeting. And many times I would come to that meeting with a big book, and nobody would show up. But because I was willing... Oh, and there was a guy in AA, Red C was his name, and I bitch and complain about my cigarette habit, and he looked like... He talked like... He looked like Burl Ives, those of you who are, like, older. Burl Ives was this pretty good actor, big guy. And his name was Red C, and he wore red suspenders, and he looked at me and says, Michael, why don't you ask God for the willingness to be willing to give up the cigarettes? I thought, what are you talking? Willingness to be willing. I thought he was crazy, but I asked God for the willingness to be willing. But when I do that now, I still do that. When I have a character defect that I don't want to give up or I don't know what to do about, I ask my higher power for the willingness to be willing, but I got to do a little bit of action, you know? I used to, before program, I worked part-time for 43 years. I never had a full-time job until I was 43 years old because I don't like commitment, you know what I mean? And I like people to take care of me. And work is hard. I don't like to work. And So what I used to do, I get out of bed, I had a part-time job, and I say, God, give me the willingness, if it be thy will, let me go to work today. And then I go back to bed and wake up at noon, and I go, well, I guess it's not your will, God. But that wasn't so comfortable, you know, being clean and sober. You know, I started to feel guilty, and it just wasn't good. So when I asked God for the willingness to be willing, in retrospect, I went to the Smokers Anonymous meeting, and I asked for help, okay? So it was all fine and good, and the three-pack-a-day cigarette habit was removed, and then I put on 30 pounds in 30 days. And it wasn't the first time I was compulsively overeating, but it was the first time I was conscious of it because I was clean and I was sober. And so I went back to AA, and I said, you know, the Häagen-Dazs and the pizza, a good AA meeting makes me hungry, but I just can't stop eating. And the old-timer said, what's wrong with you? You don't care about your eating. We don't care about your smokers. So I knew that there was Overeaters Anonymous. And I came to you guys, and I listened to you, and I heard that three meals a day, nothing in between. Some of you didn't eat carbs. Some of you didn't eat whatever it was. I thought I could figure it out myself. And so I couldn't. I started putting on more and more weight, and I didn't. I guess I had to get desperate enough to ask for help. So Matt Masterman, may he rest in peace, was a 100-pounder. He was in the early 80s. He was very popular in this group. And he knew the big book inside and out, and he gave me his phone number. He says, Michael, why don't you call me? And when I called him, he says, well, what are you going to eat today? And I said, I don't know. He says, well, you want to figure it out? And I go, no, because I didn't really want to know what I was putting in my body. And he said, why don't you call me at the end of the night and tell me what you ate? And I could do that. That was a little bit of willingness to be willing. And I have no idea what I ate, but I know that it was cleaner because I wanted to impress Matt, you know. It's the first fifth step I took with my food. Admitted to God, myself, another human being, honestly what I was putting in my mouth. And Matt got me in the habit of doing that a little bit on a daily basis, little by little. And the weight came off, and I started to attend your meetings consistently. And I don't know why I had left Matt. I met a man named Richie, and Richie was a working actor, and he talked like this, and he had lost over 100 pounds. And he would be a little bit more direct in the food that I was choosing. So if I told him I ate some cheese, he'd say, why are you eating artery cloggers? Jesus, artery cloggers, what are you eating that stuff for? And so he got me a little bit more disciplined in the food that I was eating. I wasn't eating recreational sugar, you know, and I hadn't eaten cake and ice cream or any of that sugar stuff that I was eating before I came to you. I was eating three meals a day with nothing in between. And I was a little upset with Richie because when his food cleaned up, you know, he'd say, I'm on a roll. You know, and he'd get even more strict about, he'd make comments about what I was eating. I would call Richie on a daily basis. 7 days a week. And he said, Michael, he said, why don't you give me a reprieve on the weekends? Call somebody else. And so I got offended. But I called somebody else. I called Carl, who is now living in Florida. And at the time, the steps really started working miracles in my life. I had not had a job since, you know, I was 43 years. And my sponsor at the time told me, I told him that I was teaching 17 years prior. I was student teaching, and I had stopped doing that to actually go and practice my disease. And he said, well, why don't you go back and find out what it would take to get your teaching credential? And I said, I don't want a teaching credential. In those days, I was an actor. They'd ask me to commit to my job, and I said, you know, I got to be available for auditions. So I leave at noon, and I go to the beach. And I get a tan, you know, and I run, you know, I do stuff. I never went to auditions, but I had to be available for auditions. And so, I don't know, my sponsor said, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're a teacher, whether you're an actor. He says the spiritual concept is you go back and complete something that you left incomplete. He said, can you go and talk to a counselor at that Cal State LA? I said, yeah, I could do that. A willingness to be willing to take a contrary action. So I talked to this counselor. I was a liberal studies major. I got my BA in liberal studies. Liberal studies, by the way, if you're somebody like me, it's for somebody that doesn't know what the F they want to do. So I got a degree in liberal studies. I cheated my way through college. I'd studied as little as possible. And this guy found my records. He went to any lengths to look, and he found that I only needed to take, I think, two classes to complete the methods classes or whatever. And so I went back to my sponsor, and he said, well, can you just take one class? I said, I don't think I want to just take one class. So I took a class, and I didn't cheat. And I studied, and I got an A. And that motivated me to take another class, the other class I needed to do. And then the next indicated step was to go student teach. And so I started to student teach, and this little second grade classroom would go once a week to kids that were physically health impaired. They had walkers and wheelchairs, and I fell in love with those kids. And I don't know why. They were just they had this physical disability, and so my heart sort of melted with them. And so the teacher that I was volunteering with said, Michael, you seem to have an affinity for working with these kids. Why don't you go for an interview over here and see, you know, if you get the interview. Well, I was scared to death to go on job interviews. But you guys taught me just to be honest. So I didn't have a resume, you know, but I had this class put together a book of Mr. Blanc, we love you. You're the best teacher ever. And they drew pictures and everything. And so they stapled it together and stuff. And I said, well, this is my resume. I said, I've never taught before, but this is as good as it gets. And there was a panel, and they said, well, you know what, Michael? You've got the job, but you have to go back to school and get your special ed credential. I just got my regular ed credential. And again, I said, but you know what? I wanted to do it because I love the kids. Many times I worked in that special ed, special day class for 11 years. And God knows that there was a higher power there. These kids were, they were in dire. There was a guy named Steve Hazard. He's also died. He was in my group. And he was blind. And he had a seeing eye dog named Gretchen. So I said, Steve, why don't you come to my class and talk to the class, regular ed and special ed class, and see what it's like to be blind. I'm sure the kids would love to know about that. So Steve came, and he had a seeing eye dog, and we went across the street to the 99-cent store. I was a big deal. I would give my kids a dollar each, and I'd say, you can get anything you want in this 99-cent store. And they go, really, Mr. Blanc? But the trial was is to push them across the train tracks and just to get them over there in one piece. So I had Steve Hazard with his dog Gretchen leading us across the street. And I hear somebody blows a horn, beep, beep, Mr. Blanc, oh, my God, do you need help? And they pulled over and they helped us get across the street. But they left their kids in my hands, and there was definitely a higher power for 11 years that held those kids in good stead. And I would call Richie occasionally. I'd go, Richie, you know, they're testing these kids. Some of these kids can't even talk, and they want to know fluency. How many words can they read? They can't even friggin' talk. And Richie would say, Michael, just shut up. He said, shut up and love the kids. Shut up and love the kids. And many times today I hear Richie's head in my voice, just shut up and love the kids. That's been my saving grace. So anyway, I worked with these kids for 11 years. And Richie moved. Richie got married. He married somebody from the Food Channel, which is appropriate for somebody in Overeaters Anonymous. And he moved to like South Carolina or something. And if I'm your sponsor, I don't leave. I'm like the plague. I won't leave. Ask Seppi. Taro, my sponsor is semi-retired in Mexico. He's been to Europe, and he is benevolent enough to take my phone calls wherever he is. And we adjust the time schedule, and I call him on a daily basis. And for me, in Overeaters Anonymous, that really holds me in good stead. I don't necessarily have to do that for my other sponsors, my AA sponsor. They don't want to know the exact nature of my food. They don't give a damn. So Terrell has been benevolent. So where was I going with that? So Richie moves away. And then Richie says, give me another reprieve. You can call me anytime, but you need somebody to be a sponsor that can see you. And so I said, well, would Terrell be a good choice? And I knew Terrell's story. Terrell came from bad, lost over 100 pounds. So I asked Terrell to be my sponsor, and we've been together for a couple decades now. It's been crazy. It goes by so quick. I'm talking to young David, who is no longer young David. He says, I don't qualify as a youth. And it just went by like that, Dave. And the older you get, the quicker it goes. So that's a lesson for me to enjoy, you know, every moment. You don't realize it when you're younger, or you do, but you don't give a damn. You think you're going to last forever. So I've been with Terrell, and I've been taking a fifth step with my food. Richie taught me this AEIOU, which is a short form of a little 10th step, 11th step that I take every night. And I remember going to my AA sponsor, and I told him, you know, Clancy, was I selfish, resentful, fearful, afraid? And, you know, it's got a whole litany of stuff in the big book you can do. And he says, kid, you can answer yes to every one of them questions. Don't bother. Don't do that stuff. So when I got the AEIOU, I went and I said, look, this is what I do, AEIOU. Is that okay? And he says, yeah. He says, because it's compact and it's concise and everything. So just a little inventory that I admit what I ate. I commit what I'm going to eat the next day. And I talk about is exercise. Do I do any exercise? I don't know about you. Seppi was at one time, maybe you still consider yourself my exercise sponsor, but my head, after teaching for a full day, I'm too tired. I don't want to do it. And I think Seppi has been to the other extreme, where she was an exercise bulimic, I believe. And so she has some kind of a, at least I believe she has some kind of a middle-of-the-road perception. She's not emotionally attached to my exercise program. But, you know, even today, Richie's says to me, I exercise 4 to 7 times a week. 4 to 7 times a week. That's in my head. And my exercise is not, I'm not crazy. I do 30, 31 minutes cardio 4 to 7 times a week. And most of the time I like to do it with my dog because I feel less guilty. I love my dog and I hate my dog at the same time. Sometimes I come home. I'm all over the place, guys. I kind of apologize. But if you have the kind of head that I have, maybe you can follow me. Hopefully you can. But my daughter, Ileana, brought this little puppy home. And I said, we're not going to get a dog because the house is cluttered and we don't need any more clutter in the house. And I was raised by my grandmother, who I wanted a dog desperately when I was a kid. And grandma said, you couldn't handle a dog. You're not responsible enough. And I'm going to take the responsibility. I'm not going to. And she yelled. And I found myself doing the same thing with Illy, you know. But my wife has a little influence over me. And so she kind of talked me into it. And then Illy did take care of the dog and train the dog until she went off and went to college. And so we had to kind of take care of the dog. And I said, I'm not walking the dog. And sometimes Christine wasn't around to walk the dog. And I get home from the big meeting on Wednesday night and, you know, get home 10:30, 11 o'clock, live in Lincoln friggin' Heights. You don't want to go out and walk the dog. And we spoil the damn dog. We don't have a fence. So the dog won't pee in the yard. She has to go out and pee in the neighborhood. So I'm walking the dog at 11 o'clock at night. And I'm starting to love the dog. And the dog sleeps with us, and the dog is in the bed, and we have to, she won't move. I have to get up and go to there. We have to go around the dog. And, you know, they say that the dog trusts you if they do that. So I love the friggin' dog. And, you know, we were talking. She just lost her dog. And that's one of the reasons why I didn't want a dog, because I don't want to feel any more loss. I come from a weird background, and maybe I can talk about that for a little bit. But so I'm teaching, and then there's this job that comes along with the arts education program for LA Unified, and it's an acting job. You teach acting to kids that are elementary school kids, and so I applied for it. And I had somebody come down and watch me with my special ed class. And we were mixing with a regular ed class. And they called me up and they said, well, if you want this job, you can take this job. That was, God, that was about 18, 17 years ago. So I've been going from school to school. I'm an itinerant teacher. And I work with kids five classes a day, kindergarten, pre-K through sixth grade. And and I supposedly am teaching him acting. And I don't know. I think I put on one show in my 17 years. And I've got the excuse that we can't do it because I'm only there once a week. And the teachers really have to buy into it in order to put in this. And once one of my schools, a principal, made the teachers do it. And so I was there once a week. And it was kind of fun. And again, I teach pantomime, improvisation. But the main thing I teach is program. And what we do is we pass around a magic penny. It doesn't matter whether in the sixth grade or the kindergarten, and I have a little a penny bracelet. And we sing this song, Love is Something If You Give It Away. Give it away. Give it away. Love is something if you give it away. Keep on getting more. It's just like a magic penny. Hold on tight. You won't have any. Lend it, spend it, you'll have so many. It rolls all over the floor. Come on, sixth graders. Love is something if you give it away. And we're passing this damn penny around. And the person who gets it, I go, yeah, you got the penny. And what are you supposed to do with it? Got to give it away. Give it to the next person. What do you say? Thank you. What do you say? You're welcome. You know, because you did a good thing, you get a magic penny too. And it's so juvenile, and it's so elementary, and it's so kumbaya, and it's so program. But that's how I end my classes, you know. And what we do, another thing we do is, I'm going to put this girl on the spot. Come here for a second.
Oh, God.
No, that's okay. It's okay. You're welcome at the meeting. So I'm just kind of telling what I do when I'm an acting teacher.
Yes.
And we go from your elbow to elbow, eyeball to eyeball, and I say, good evening. What's your name?
Sarah.
Good evening, Sarah. You say, good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Michael.
And Sarah, find one thing that I like about Sarah. Beautiful eyes and blonde hair, and I don't know what LAEC stands for.
This is the Los Angeles Equestrian Center.
Oh, so you
do have brain therapy there.
Then you got to find one thing you'd like about me.
Your personality. It's
and she just got it. So, they don't get too much theater, but they get a lot of love, and they get a lot of communication. And this is, and thank God they don't watch me that much, because I'm left to my own devices, and I get to come up with all this stuff. Although last year, I hope this my supervisor is not in the 12-step program or doesn't hear this. Oh, I was miserable, man. I've always gotten, they call it a stall, I've always gotten reviewed. But this lady, you had to do it exactly the way she wanted. And it was very, very hard for me to do. And I did it, and I didn't get a glowing review. And but I'm still teaching. I've been teaching for, if God keeps me alive, it'll be 29 years. at the end of this semester. I can retire, actually. My wife has been retired for a while. And I kept asking God, do I retire? Give me a sign. Give me a sign. Because I'm afraid to retire because I'm lazy. I mean, I don't want to get lazy. And I know it's so good for me to teach. And yet, I'm a little bit more tired than I was 29 years ago. So what God did is had our union arrange for a 21% raise over the next year and a half. Now, teachers don't get 21% raises, so I figured that's a message from God that I'm going to take it a day at a time and I'm going to keep going. And so I'm proud of what I do and I'm proud of my profession. Somebody like me, I still don't want to get out of bed in the morning. Even when we're on vacation, I don't like to get out of bed. You know what I mean? But I got a group of guys that call, we call it the party line. And David R. coined it that. And from 7 to 7:30, guys call and I channel them in. And we kibitz with each other. We talk and we joke. We read spiritual literature. We pray. We don't say the rote prayer, but we do say eventually a rote prayer. But we say, God, you know what? I don't want to go to school today. It's bumper-to-bumper traffic. And I please adjust my attitude and let me be kind to my wife because I went off on her the other night. Whatever mishigas is going on. And we talk to each other about that. Then we say the we version of the third-step prayer and the we version of the seven-step prayer. And Jonathan S. says a bunch of stuff from the big book. And then we do my favorite thing, if you're a Beatles fan, we all sing, help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being round. Help us get our feet back on the ground. This is the best part. Won't you please, please help us, help us, help us. And it's in the ooh that just sends that message to God. And we have a good old time, man. And it's called the party line. And anybody's welcome if you have the guts to join us from 7 to 7:30. What my family used to be like, I was born in 1951. And my mom suffered from something called postpartum depression, which is normal, I think, for a lot of women who have kids. But hers, she never got better. And then she was diagnosed with postpartum psychosis, and then she was a full-blown schizophrenia in the early 50s. And she had many suicide attempts, and she had a lot of shock treatment. And there was an operation called a lobotomy in the early 50s, where they cut a part of your brain that they thought was disease. And she begged for it, and she got the lobotomy. And it didn't make her any better, but it didn't make her any worse. And at the age of 44 at Camarillo State Hospital, she keeled over from a heart attack, going to get a pack of cigarettes, ironically. And so she died. And I remember when they were burying her in the ground, my father asked the rabbi, what was the point of that, rabbi? She suffered her whole life. And the rabbi said, Michael, sometimes we just don't know what God's will is. And I thought, that's a chicken shit answer. What kind of a God would be that way? So, you know, after many years of abstinence and sobriety, you know, I inventoried the whole thing. My mom gave me the gift of life, you know, and she didn't have to suffer. You know, can you imagine, you know, to be in her 90s now, shuffling along with the lobotomy and the shock treatment, so didn't have to suffer. My son, Sean, was diagnosed with bipolar. Yeah, bipolar. And he just kept, he wasn't working. His mother was taking care of him. He's laying on the couch watching TV. And so we had a little therapy session with his therapist. And I said, you know, I'm involved in 12 steps. Could Sean try this? And the therapist said, well, yeah, you know, why not? He said, but remember, don't get off your meds because, you know, you're bipolar. You got to be on your meds. So Sean joined this very structured and disciplined group, and he's been clean and sober for 16 years, clean and sober, without meds. Now, there are people in the group that are taking meds, and he could have taken meds as well. So, you know, I used to be sort of prejudiced and judgmental of anybody that was taking meds. But then my son Nicholas, who's now 24 years old, had a psychotic break, 10 minutes. And he was in Vermont, he was a very intelligent guy. He had a good scholarship, and we lost communication with him. And he wouldn't return our texts, our phone calls. So we flew up to Vermont, and we brought him back. And he got into the program at UCLA, and he's diagnosed with schizophrenia. And so he is taking meds, which are a little different than they had in the early 50s. And but then a few months ago, he stopped taking his meds, and he had another break. And then he let us know about it. He was honest about it. We didn't know. And it's weird because I go to that, another 12-step program that doesn't allow you to enable people. So I thought I was just leaving him alone and suffering, you know, the consequences of not doing that. But I understand one of the symptoms of schizophrenia is that you just stop taking your meds. So anyway, God's got him. He's a barista. He's working at a local coffee shop called Holy Grounds, which is appropriate because God has him. And I'm an enabler. You know, he's living with us, and you know, he pays us $100, you know, for rent, which is relatively nothing. But yesterday he got angry. I said, Nick, you know, can you Venmo me the $100? What, Dad? Why? And he got angry with me. And I said, because I asked you a few days ago to do it. And he did it. And so I and then I have another son, Sean, who I said is sober. And on Saturdays, we meet at 7 a.m. at Cantor's Restaurant. And it's my way of making amends to him. I was never really financially supportive of him and my ex-wife. So I take him to breakfast. You know, it's a big deal. And even more important than that, paying for the breakfast, is the communication that we have. But Sean was angry at me this morning because we didn't come to his Thanksgiving gig. He does a special thing for... I have three children from my current wife, and they're kind of close. But Sean said that his kids had pink eye or some kind of... So my kids and me, we opted not to go. So I called my sponsor, and my sponsor said, well, that's nice of him. You know, don't take it personal. He was protecting you. But when he showed up at Cantor's today, he was pissed off. And he said, you don't care anything about my family and all this stuff, which is probably righteous anger from many, many years ago when I left his mom. And I was, yeah. So, and then he goes and he tells the waitress today. He says, my dad didn't come to the Thanksgiving. We kind of know this waitress at Cantor. And I go, oh, really? And he doesn't come and see my grandkids enough, his grandkids enough. Oh, really? And then the waitress starts to, it's a very awkward situation. And the waitress says, well, you know, I've been married the second time, and my son doesn't necessarily like my current husband. He says, but that's the way it is. You know, it's, you know what? He wants my husband to have a good life. And whatever she said worked, and we were laughing at the end of the day. But, yeah, you know, communication is a bitch. And, you know, even with people in the program, you know what I mean? It's an art form. Dr. Paul used to say it's all about communication. And I belong to a group also that deals with financial irresponsibility. And those of us who have had to make amends financially get to the other side, and then we help people that are going through the same stuff. And Vince, who used to run that particular class, would say it's not even about finances. It's all about communication, especially when you have a significant other. So, Christine, oh, let me talk about Thanksgiving, and then I'll get off of the podium. So, Seppi asked me how did I have a good Thanksgiving, and it was really rough for me because I didn't compulsively overeat. And we took one car, and I went to my nephew's house, and they have a lovely house, and him and his significant other, and my sister-in-law was there, my brother-in-law was there, and I was eating abstinently. And after about the second hour, I started to think, why does my nephew have a better job than me? And he's twice as young, and he's a professor, and I'm only an elementary school teacher. And then I thought, why is my brother-in-law handy around the house, and he owns property, and he makes money, and I'm going to be a pauper when I retire? Why is my sister-in-law talking so loud, and why is she so gregarious, and can't she lower her voice a little bit? And it was all in my head. And by the fourth hour, it was really in my head. And by the fifth friggin' hour, you know, I was angry at Christine. Because she wanted to stay the whole five friggin' hours, you know? And so I had the silent scorn all the way home. But I didn't eat. What would you rather do? Overeat and put the tryptophan and get unconscious? Or feel the craziness? Well, I chose to... God helped me to feel the craziness. And it passed. And I think I made a couple of phone calls and I did a 10-step. I did all that stuff. But sometimes no human power can relieve it. And I just have to breathe, and I have to trust, and I just have to hold on until it passes. When I'm in the self-centered fear, that's much more powerful than my higher power. And even though my sponsor will tell me, don't believe it, don't believe it, don't believe it, I believe it. And the miracle is that I abstain through it, and it passes, and I feel wonderful. And God's given me a blessed, blessed life. Just stay around a minute at a time, a day at a time. So I appreciate you listening to my head. Terrell also told me, they flew me to San Francisco a couple of weekends ago, and they fed me, and they made us, I took my wife, and we spent an extra day. And I don't know about you, but I've never been flown. I'm not a circuit speaker, but I certainly wanted to hear my tape. And I heard it, and I thought, this is horrible. And Terrell says, don't ever listen to yourself speaking. It's just not. Talk about compare and despair. So I will make a commitment to God in this meeting that I will not listen to this tape. Thank you for letting me share. Not over? How long? When is it over?
Oh, okay. We're going to ask you to repeat the question.
I will repeat the question if there are any questions. No questions? Go ahead. Yes, Lucy.
Thank you so much. You're in a lot of programs. And you work.
Yes.
And you exercise.
Yes.
How do you...
balance? I'm in a lot of programs, and I work, and I exercise, and how do I balance life on life's terms? Probably the steps. The 10th step that I take every night. No, the 11th step when I retire. And the 10th step when I get crazy and stuff. I just give it all to God. Terrell's a big help. If I have a question, any of my sponsors, and I have a sponsor in every group that I'm at, it's trial and error, and I think I've become pretty good at it, but it's all guided by a higher power. And if you get in trouble, call me, Lucy. Okay. Yes.
Thank you so much, Michael. You talked about having a dog and, the dog having the lifespan of the dog, and also about, being in a Thanksgiving situation with people and getting into that comparison. What helps you to get back to being present and in that sort of recovery mindset of gratitude and abundance and away from the insecurity?
What helps me to get present and away from the insecurity when the insecurity is screaming at the top of its lungs? A 10th step, the telephone. And after I do that, the contrary action is looking for somebody like who just walks in and trying to help somebody else. That's when all else fails. And then, like I'm telling you, Thanksgiving, even that didn't help. It was just breathing and doing the best I could to take contrary action. So, but, when all else fails, work with another compulsive overeater. You can call me if you get in that place. It helps me as well. Those of you who sponsor, it's lifesaver. Sponsorship is a life-saving tool. Sep?
Has your definition of a higher power changed in these 3 decades?
It does, and then it doesn't, and then it does, and then it doesn't. It's very benevolent. It's very loving. I'm involved in a prayer train, which I got at the OA birthday party. I'm going to pitch the birthday party. There was a two-way prayer. Somebody talked about that. And so I thought, yeah, God's going to write to me. This is crazy. What's going to happen? But I've been doing it, and it'll be a year. And every 2 weeks, I meet somebody new across the country, and we talk to our higher power, and then the higher power talks back. And it's really kept me gentle, and it's amazing, because the higher power is there, and I don't have to deny it, but I still have to check it out, you know, with the sponsor. But this two-way prayer thing is, they're so benevolent. I was supposed to call this lady at 3:15, and I called her at 4:45, and she's been available, and I've never had anybody at the two-way prayer. I've gotten pissed off because they're not there when they say they are, but we're very kind to each other. So it's a kind, loving, gentle higher power that I have. You're welcome.
It is now time for our seventh.